Welcome to Not Home Alone, a podcast from the family ministry at St. Albans Episcopal Church in Waco, Texas. I'm your host, Stephanie Drum, and I'm the minister to children, youth, and families here at St. Albans. My co-hosts for this series will be our two clergy, Aaron Zimmerman and Neil McGowan. In this series on parenting, we're looking at the love and logic technique, which helps you understand various skills you can use to foster security, independence, and love in your children. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 2 of Not Home Alone and our series on love and logic, or parenting with love and logic. And I am joined by my two co-hosts, Aaron Zimmerman and Neil McGowan, as well, hey everyone, as well as Aaron's wife, Andrea. And so they're going to be able to talk a little bit about their own experience with love and logic. So that'll be a lot of fun. Hi, Andrea.
Hi.
I'm glad you could join us today. So last week we left you with a question about, if you could let your yes be yes and your no be no as a parent. The question was, can I maintain a day where my yes is yes and my no is no? And we talked a lot about, you know, having consistency as a parent, but I kind of was wondering how y'all were doing with that this past week, and if y'all had any fun experiences with that, our listeners, but really anybody else. I know, Andrew, you had a thought about, like, the meaning of no for love and logic.
Yes. Well, I am not privy to whatever was said last week, so I hope I'm not being redundant, but I think it's really important that children understand what no means. You know, there's a lot of kids who sometimes they feel like that's kind of a variable, or it's not a defined sort of statement, or what do you call it?
It's like an opening to a negotiation.
After the 10th no, it means no.
Right.
For love and logic, it is important that children understand that boundary. Mm-hmm. I've known some families that don't use the word no, and it is a nightmare. And and it's really hard to establish as they get older. So
yeah,
for children to understand what no means, I think that consistency is really important. And with love and logic, consistency is really important, because they will find the inconsistencies, and they will use them to their advantage.
They will exploit them. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, they look for the loopholes. I mean, there is a parenting technique called redirection, and sometimes that's appropriate and can be effective. Like if the kid says, hey, I want to watch this show, how about we go outside and blow bubbles? And there are times where that works, but again, it is really important that kids know that there are times when the world will say no to you. Mm-hmm, if you are late with your mortgage payment, the bank will say no, and they will charge you a late fee. They don't try to redirect your attention or something like that. So, again, we're trying to help kids be prepared for the world as it is, not as we wish it were. And so I think that's one of the key things, that no be no, and that you be consistent with that. And again, as we said last week, sometimes parenting with love and logic, if you're a parent that has not used no a lot, or is not it kind of dealt with responsibility and consequences, it can feel, I'm going to use air quotes, mean, but it's not mean. It's actually really, because again, and we're going to talk about this today, because the skill is empathy, like using empathy and doing this all in the context of love. You're helping your child get ready for a world where there will be lots of no's, and they need to be emotionally ready for that.
Absolutely. And on the flip side, yes is important too. And it's important that we as parents honor when we say yes to something, and even if it requires some sort of inconvenience for us, if we have committed to something with our children, we need to honor it, because otherwise they lose our trust.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that is
probably
a very good point.
You lose their trust.
It's probably harder sometimes to stick with no than to just give in on small things, but then it comes back to bite you, right, on the bigger things, when they are like, well, no actually doesn't mean no.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's really important. So our skill last week was talking about neutralizing arguing, and I think that really goes hand in hand with, you know, sort of cutting out that argumentativeness. So yeah, that was our first skill last week, and we're going to go through two more skills today. The first one is delayed or anticipatory consequences. There's a lot of syllables in that, so I'm going to just say delayed consequences. And then the next skill we'll talk about is empathy, or the instant empathetic response. But first, you know, for skill number two, as I said last time about these skills, you can really, you don't have to do them in order. Like, you don't have to learn number one first and then move on to number two. It's just that these are all skills that you can do all at the same time, or you can pick one that works best, or especially if you're new to Love and Logic. But these are all things that you can, that will all help in their own way. And so this skill, delayed consequences, is kind of just what it sounds like. If there's an issue that you don't necessarily need to immediately hand out the consequence right when the thing happens, right when the problem happens. But this helps parents to understand that it's okay to delay the consequence when you don't know what to do, or if you're too angry to think, which is happens a lot. I mean, you know, especially if your kid has done something, you know, you don't want to act out of anger. You don't want to kind of act in the passion of the moment. And so many, many people were trained to believe by whoever it is, their parents or teachers, that consequences need to be immediate, that they need to be something right then. Like, this happens, A happens, so B must happen. And that's kind of what we're gonna break that myth a little bit. And so what this does, this, you know, you believing that you have to kind of implement whatever consequence or whatever punishment really immediately makes a lot of parents feel incompetent, and it can make them feel like they're not giving the right punishment or consequence, or they're reacting before taking time to think about the problems that could come from how they're reacting.
Right. Then you have to put another 20 in the therapy jar.
Exactly. Put another 20 in the therapy jar.
It's true, especially if you've had a parent, if you were raised in a house where there was a parent who, when you misbehaved, there was like an immediate yelling or something. Which a lot of us were raised with a drill sergeant or two in our house. And so that shapes how we think, and we think we need to react the same way. And I think not only does it make you feel kind of incompetent, because parents, you know, everybody has that moment where you're like, oh, I should have, instead I should have done that. I shouldn't have overreacted, I should have done more than I did. I blew that off, and I shouldn't, you know. So
absolutely.
I think the other thing that this delayed consequences, it gives the parent not only time to think, but also to talk to other people, talk to the person you're parenting with. Or if you have a person you respect that you've seen be a good parent or is just a wiser person, you can say, hey, this is the situation. What would you do? And I think that's really empowering to parents. I hope, listeners, you find this sort of freeing to think like no parent has all the answers. You're absolutely allowed to take time for yourself to think about what you want to do as a parent. If you're, you know, as a single parent, if you're parenting with another person, or if you have somebody you can, you know, your lifeline you can call, you know, and, you know, there's a lot to be said for the fact that your brain shuts down when you're angry, and almost any decision made in anger is not going to be the right one.
And that goes for the child as well. Their brain is shut down a little bit too, I think, in that moment. And so, you know, to punish, or not even punish, but even any kind of consequences when they're all worked up and they're angry too, isn't going to really do any good. It's, you're having the same effect on each other, the same negative effect on each other.
Yeah, Andrew, you wanted to say something, I think.
Yeah, well, you mentioned feeling empowered. A lot of this has to do with power. And when you're arguing with a 2-year-old about something and you are getting angry as the parent, that child has the power. The parent doesn't have the power in that situation. In fact, the parent is the one who is out of control because they are the adult here. And remembering that that I am the adult and this is the child, and shifting that mindset, I think is empowering. And delaying a consequence, it keeps the adult in power, and it allows the adult to cool down, which we often need, especially if I was raised in a drill sergeant home, and when we started using love and logic, it was because I was being a drill sergeant and I didn't know any better. And so, delaying the consequence keeps the power with the parent, and then it takes it away from the child, and they know it because they don't have control. They're hanging out in their crib, or we used the basement steps a lot, which was great.
It wasn't like a dungeon, more. I promise. It was fine. It was clean. It wasn't like it was a dungeon, well lit.
But it was just a little bit uncomfortable.
Just a place to be when you need to think about it. I mean, if you think about, like, let's say you've had a battle with your, like a battle of the wills, and your kid really wanted a treat at about 10 o'clock in the morning. You knew that she then wouldn't eat lunch. And so you kind of had your no, and your no was no. And then you step outside for a second, you come back in, and there's a vase in a million pieces on the floor. Like, there's been a retaliatory child terrorist attack. And a parent who's been trained and only knows how to react in anger and immediately will, it just ratchets up the situation. But a parent who's been given permission, which we hope love and logic will give you the permission, the freedom, the new insight to say, actually, I don't have to respond right now. And you can just walk in there. You'll feel yourself getting angry. But because you've listened to this podcast, instead, you will say, huh, that's interesting. And turn around and walk out. Huh, that's interesting. I'll have to think about that. And just turn around and walk out. And you've just immediately done this like judo move on your kid. And you because you realize that there will be consequences for this, and you just need some time to think about it, and that is a bummer for the kid, and your kid will be so confused, and that's exactly where you want him or her, because now her brain is engaged in thinking about, oh, I was actually trying to get a rise out of mommy, and it didn't work. Hmm. And then they have to look at the mess of flowers and water on the floor and then think through. And by the way, that's not a real example. None of my children, if you know my kids, ever did that. I'm just sort of being hypothetical, but I have known situations like that.
Andrea was talking about meaning and being serious about when you say yes and when you say no. And if your child knows that you're serious about keeping your word, then they know that when you go into the kitchen and say, oh, that's interesting. They know that you don't even have to say anything for them to know that you're going to do something about it. And that keeps you from kind of blowing up in the moment. And they still know that it's going to be addressed later.
And if that child has some experience with love and logic, and they think this through in their head, they're thinking, I better fix this. I better clean this up, and I better come up with a plan to replace that vase. And it might be a good idea to go pick some flowers in the meantime. Like if they are raised in this, like they start coming to those conclusions themselves. So they know that there are consequences, and then they might try to mitigate some of those by cleaning up their mess.
Right.
Do you think this too also prevents the consequence from being purely arbitrary?
Yes.
Is when you react in the heat of the moment, whatever that might look like, it's often an arbitrary emotional reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you have time to actually think, you can think, well, this is the sort of logical consequence that follows from breaking the vase. They're going to have to make some money to buy the vase back.
Right.
To make the money, they're going to have to do this work that maybe they don't want to do.
Sell plasma.
Sell plasma, that's right.
You heard it here first.
Get lemonade stand. you know, do something like that. And so it provides a way for consequence to actually follow the action versus your just angry reaction.
Yeah, absolutely. The delay in consequence is as much for the cool down as it is for the parent to come up with a plan. Sometimes, like Aaron said, that the consequence is real obvious, but there are other times where, you know, you really have to think about it and really have to consider it. And especially as the kids get older and, you know, things are just a little bit more complicated. So delaying, there's nothing wrong with it, delaying a consequence. And as they become more accustomed and they understand the expectations, they tend to, like, while you're delaying the consequence, they are worried and sweating. And maybe they're going to, like I said, do some other things to show that they understand. Sometimes you need to really think about what the appropriate consequence is, because it isn't always obvious. And sometimes you have to make it. I mean, sometimes I have had to come up with consequences that are a little bit manufactured. And some people have said, that maybe they're a little manipulative. But, for example, kids who are fighting don't get to go get Frosties in the drive-thru. We used to live by a Wendy's.
Right.
So,
that sounds good.
When they are in car seats, they can't really get out. So the only person who wasn't fighting was mom.
I guess I get a Frosty is mom.
So, sometimes it's hard to come up with a consequence. Maybe somebody's being really nasty to their sibling or to their parent. And so the rest of the family doesn't want to be around that person. So that person's going to have to hang out in their room for a while. Well, it just so happens that the rest of us are having a popcorn party. And if you get the microwave popcorn, it smells up the whole house so they can smell it. And I had no problem doing this, and it worked. Hey. It worked really well.
Yeah. It's a win-win. They learn a valuable lesson. You get popcorn.
Yeah. So next time they have an incentive to be kind to their family. And then it's equally important when things are going well and everybody's, getting along and you see children building up each other, to have you also have a popcorn party then. Like you reward when you see behavior that is worth rewarding, then you need to invest at those times in that behavior.
And I'll say,
consequences aren't purely punitive.
Right. Right. Andrew exactly. said manipulative, which I get that, and I'll kind of smooth that over as I like to do. I'm making a smoothing action with my hands.
I had no problem doing it.
I call it being creative.
Absolutely.
In that you want to, again, because when you're having the Frosty or you're enjoying the popcorn and there's a child not enjoying it, love and logic, and empathy is what we're trying to talk about here. You don't want to, like, lick your Frosty spoon in front of the kid's face and then go, ha ha. Like, what's that kid's name in the Simpsons? Nelson? Oh, anyways.
Ralph Wiggum!
Ralphie.
Well, Ralph is the one. Yeah, that's right. But then there was that bully, that kid that's always like, ha-ha!
Oh.
Anyways.
I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons, so I don't know. But
I wasn't either.
And now it's super tame.
Look how that worked out. My kids are totally watch The Simpsons.
Yeah. Anyways.
I'm more of a King of the Hill girl, but anyway, go ahead.
Neil McGowan does an amazing impersonation.
Nelson.
So back to what you were saying about the Frosties. So I would not lick my spoon and say, ha ha.
Yeah.
But what I do say is, I know you really wanted to participate in this, and it is so sad that you can't, but hopefully next time we can do this together.
You are allowed to note that the Frosty is delicious, but at the same time, you do want to show compassion for the kid who is experiencing the painful consequences of his or her own actions. And so I think being creative about it, as the kid gets older, one of the things that a lot of parents deal with is every child will at some point test their parents to see if they can deceive their parents about something.
Mm-hmm.
Every parent will catch their child in a lie at some point.
What? And it's part of the whole. That doesn't sound like kids.
I know. Not at St. Albans Episcopal Church in Waco, Texas. Tell you that right now. Stephanie Drum makes sure they all are.
They're all in line. They're all perfect.
Royal Mounted Police. Yeah. So never tell a lie. But many children will at some point tell a lie and be caught in it. And then, you know, parents will say, like, go to your room, or I'm disappointed in you. And that will maybe do something, but what the real consequence of that is you lose trust. And this is a situation where there will be delayed consequences, because there will come a time in a few months or a few weeks where they will want to do something. And you can say, you know, I still don't really feel like I can trust you. And that is honest. And you can say, I know that's really hard, but because there was a time when you were not completely truthful with me, I have a hard time trusting you now. Maybe we can think of some ways together for you to continue to, you know, build trust with me again. And that is,
it also gives the kid a way to earn the trust back.
Right.
Right.
Versus just being sent in their room doesn't earn your trust back. And it doesn't teach the kid the lesson that trust is something that is earned over time.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's a life lesson. Mm-hmm. And that's been, I mean, kids need to know how trust is built, and they need to know how, you know, for relationships, in their life as well with their parents. So that's a real big one. And that's been a big, I think, theme in our parenting.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think parents, you can know that it is totally okay to, once you start practicing this, you can sort of see it coming a long way off. So if you have, like, nagging is another thing that Love and Logic does not endorse, because that doesn't work. So if you, like, have you been nagging your kids about picking certain things up, socks, toys, whatever, and this is another episode we can talk about. But one thing that the delayed consequence that I've seen is a child asked for a thing, a new thing. And I said to this person, well, because I've seen this stuff not taken care of, I don't really feel like you're ready for this thing you've asked for yet. And that was a delayed consequence that I sort of saw coming when I saw the behavior in the present. And I didn't say anything about it in the present. I waited until they asked for this. I knew something would come where there'd be a consequence. And so, again, just kind of creativity, and you're playing the long game here.
Yeah. Do y'all have any other thoughts about that? This, you know, this skill is not about, like, making a child feel afraid of what's coming. But I think when the child gets to know that you really do, you can be taken at your word, and you're doing this in a loving way when you're not in an angry sort of place, that it really can be very effective.
Delayed consequence is not wait till your dad gets home.
I was about to say the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I grew up with delayed consequences, and it was 5:30 p.m. when dad got home from work.
Same.
Yeah.
And the hours of nervous, torturous waiting in the room.
Yeah. Just wait till we get home from church. Yeah, not that kind of
delayed. That's not delayed consequence. That's delayed anger.
Exactly.
Like, that's what that is. And that's not the same thing. Yeah, it's a threat.
And again, the consequence has no inherent relationship to the action itself. So you're not actually teaching a real world skill that the kid will learn.
Exactly. All right. Well, unless y'all have any other thoughts on that, we can go on to our next skill, which
we've mastered that. Let's move on.
We've mastered it, so it's not a big deal anymore. We can definitely move on and forget about that one. And this next one is actually a really important one for all of Love and Logic, and that is the instant empathetic response. It's just empathy. And so empathy is kind of something that I feel like a lot of people are talking about right now. But empathy is just a way of putting yourself in somebody else's position and feeling what they would feel if you were in their position. Putting yourself in their shoes and kind of expressing that you don't necessarily understand, but expressing how, or just imagining how it must feel for them. And so the entire structure of Love and Logic doesn't really work without this skill. And so empathy is very important because parents who practice this can replace the anger that they immediately feel with empathy. And then it makes everything much calmer. It makes the whole household calmer. It makes a specific situation much calmer that could easily go from 0 to 100. And like our first skill and our second skill, this is one where you can kind of memorize a one-liner, you know, to when something happens and you may immediately feel an angry response, but it's nice to have a little one-liner on the back burner that you can say without sarcasm to empathize with what's happening. And so, for example, it's just a short something like, oh no, this is never good, or this is so sad that this happened. What a bummer. Whatever you want to say. I don't know if y'all have any examples of your own, I'm sure, but you know, anything to kind of acknowledge that this isn't a good thing that happened, but that's not the end of it necessarily. I think this kind of goes along with what we were talking about in the previous skill a little bit. So instead of doing something immediately, it kind of is a right. buffer a little bit. And I also want to say just something about empathy in general, that you being empathetic, this really goes for everybody. And I'll say it again if I have to, but I think empathy in general is never an excuse for bad behavior. This is never to say, I understand where you're coming from, so I'm not going to have, there's no consequences because I get where they're coming from. That is, I don't think that is empathy. But it is to say, I can put myself in your shoes and feel what you may be feeling right now.
Suffering from the consequences of my bad action is painful.
Yes.
And we can all relate to that.
Ugh.
And so we can be empathetic to our children who, on the smaller way, perhaps are suffering the real consequences of bad decisions.
Right.
Yeah, I think, you know, we, as Neil said, much of life is experiencing the negative consequences of one's own actions. And so we have a deep well of empathy. If we can connect with that, and in a certain sense, like step outside of our relationship with our children a little bit, like look at it from almost a different perspective. Like, I'm a human being, they're a human being, and we're both suffering. And I know that's like a tall ask when the kid has just dumped the bowl of cereal on the floor for the fifth time. Again, back to delayed consequences, like give your time to cool off. But that is kind of the idea here. And I will say that if you are someone who goes through most of your day angry at yourself and speaking to your own self a lot of shaming language, and you don't have a lot of empathy and compassion for yourself, it will be hard to show this to your children because you're beginning from a place where your own tank is sort of on empty. And so this, you know, again, back to therapy, it's a good thing for you to find a friend or a counselor or somebody to begin dealing with some of those own things. If you can, as Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. So that begins with loving yourself. And if you want to show empathy to your kids, it's really hard to do that if you don't have empathy for yourself and your own struggles and challenges and all that. So self-care is a really important part of being a good parent, especially these days where we're all under so much stress.
So we used, when our kids were young, we used the uh-oh song. And they talk about it in the Love and Logic books and video. And it's like, uh-oh, so sad. And we used it consistently. And it did a couple of things. It set me on the right track. So it snapped me out of reacting and anger. The other thing I did was train the children to, when they heard that, they knew that there were consequences. Like they crossed a line. And it got to the point where we didn't even need to say, uh-oh, this is so sad. We could say, Oh. Even now. Oh.
Elizabeth goes, oh no, like that all the time.
So the other thing I would say about empathy, though, is that similarly to trust, you kind of have to build on that. So when there are times that you can show empathy to a child that isn't in response to part of a consequence or in reaction to something they did, but maybe something they've experienced, I think then they're more receptive to receiving the empathy when it comes before a consequence or with a consequence. Like, they trust that you mean it, right, which is important because some of us get that empathetic piece out pretty sarcastically in the moment. So, but they might not hear the sarcasm if they trust that you are actually empathetic. So building on the times, you know, when you can show, like, you know, maybe, you know, they hurt themselves or something happens, like some sort of loss or toy disappears or whatever, somebody's mean to them, like really building on those times is an important investment for this, you know, later on when you have to use empathy with the consequence.
And one more parenting don't, you know, because as we said, with the delayed consequences, an example of not that is wait till your dad gets home or wait till I get you home. In the same way, an instant empathetic response is not what a common phrase you'll hear is, this hurts me more than it hurts you. Because while that may be true, I mean, there may be cases where you're sort of causing a child to experience the natural consequences of their actions, and it is painful for you. You don't like doing it because you realize that it's allowing suffering to happen in life as opposed to preventing it. But don't, it's not about you. Like, don't make this back about you. What you really want to show the child is that you understand what they're going through and that you do care and you acknowledge that. You show empathy. And like Stephanie said, you said practice empathy. Like, it is something you have to practice. It's not something that is automatic to put yourself in the shoes of your child and think about what this is like to go through for them.
Absolutely.
Some of those phrases are useful too because they help train you to have the empathy. Sometimes you don't feel the empathy and you have to fake it, mm-hmm. and then your feelings will catch up.
Yeah.
And so it's useful to have things that you can say in the moment that acknowledge the pain that the kid is going through, that you show that you acknowledge it, that give you time to catch up to actually feeling it.
So I think if you do something instead of being empathetic in the moment, if you are kind of reacting out of anger with a whatever kind of threat, it makes it easier for the child to blame you. As a parent, it makes it easier for them to blame you instead of their own behavior. So the goal here is to you want them to think, my bad decision made my life worse or made my life sad. You don't want them to think people get angry when I make a bad decision or I made somebody angry. You want them to, you want that change to kind of come from inside of them rather than I need to please mom or dad because they're going to get angry if I don't. I think it's a different sort of mentality there. And the kids, you know, they can pick up on what you're kind of putting out there. So Love and Logic talks a little bit about how some of this works with, you know, human interaction. You have these mirror neurons. And, you know, when you're interacting with another person, we kind of have this way of mirroring one another, especially with a parent and a child. And so they really do pick up on your emotional cues. They can read it without even knowing that they're doing it. And like Neil was saying, having these kind of on these words or these phrases on standby help us to, it puts us in the right place you know, so we can adequately kind of deal with the situation in an appropriate way.
Yeah, I mean, you in the excellent show notes you prepared for us, you mentioned one of these phrases, and this again kind of goes back to the delayed consequences thing. But if you are too frustrated or angry to show empathy in the moment, acknowledge that. Again, so much of Love and Logic is helping parents learn to be self-aware of their mm-hmm. own emotional life and how it's impacting their parenting. And again, it's not something that we always learn to do very well in our own families. So just giving yourself the permission to say, I'm too angry to think straight right now. I need some time to cool off and we'll talk about this later. And again, you absolutely have a permission slip from this podcast to say that to your kids.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I'm too angry to think straight. I make better decisions when I'm calm, you know? That way you can both calm down. And with this skill, like we were saying before, if a child realizes that it's their own behavior that made their life more difficult, then your relationship stays intact. It's, you know, the love is not lost. The love isn't changed between you two. It hopefully is a motivation for them to do something different in the future.
Your love is not changed independent on their good or bad decisions, that it can be a constant, and your empathy isn't go away either.
Yes.
That security is really helpful, I think, for kids to feel loved as they go into the world.
Yeah. And I think if you know, reacting with anger, When somebody gets angry at me or confronts me, my automatic response is to get defensive and confrontational right back. And as you say, the mirror neurons kind of trigger that whole thing. And I want to, how dare you attack me? Like, I was justified in my actions, and or hey, I'm only human, but you're kind of freaking out. And then that whole dynamic makes it really difficult for the kid to think through what they've done, and also makes it difficult to come back and apologize. But if you can make it your response empathetic and loving, and give the kid, in sort of a quiet, calm situation, you give the kid time to think about it, and you might actually find them coming back to you and saying, you know what, I'm really sorry. That was a bad decision. Whereas if they feel stepped on by you because you reacted in a volcanic response, it's less likely that they'll come back and say that they're sorry and have learned from their decisions.
Yeah. I mean, and we get that anger happens. Like, it's not that anger is never going to happen, or that you'll never be frustrated, or, you know, we're very like calm and content right now on this podcast. and I'm sitting in my office with the fan on, but, you know, in the moment, I understand that some things are legitimately infuriating or frustrating, but some of these things that you can kind of have in your toolkit can really help with mitigating that, breaking down that relationship rather than having the appropriate response. Well, do y'all have any other thoughts before we close?
It just feels good that we've mastered two skills.
Yeah,
today.
I feel really good about ourselves. So, but
well
yeah,
done,
this is,
definitely.
You know, we've said this before, but it's definitely ongoing. And, you know, if you mess this up today, you can always try it again tomorrow. And this is something we'll continue to work on with kids. So
it's a lot to completely change your parenting style. And just doing one skill at a time, you know, figure out one skill, whether it be dealing consequences or practicing the uh-oh, I don't know. But doing one thing at a time, and then once you feel good in that, add another skill. And unless you feel like you can do everything at one time, it's kind of a lot.
It is.
Especially probably if you're further downstream with your kids and they're a little older.
Yes, it is harder to introduce this as they get older, for sure.
Yeah.
And you will absolutely have lots of opportunities on a daily basis to try all these things if you have a child in your house.
Every day. But if anybody listening has any questions for us or any thoughts that you want to share with us, you can email us at nothomealone@stalbanswaco.org. And you can kind of just shoot any questions that you have to us there. But until then, I hope you have a great week. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.